You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
Okay.
It is Monday, May 4th, 2015. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the four-time award-winning The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live, steps from the industrial-ravaged Gowanus Canal.
In the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Ben Mankiewicz of the Young Turks. Plus, Bernie Sanders says he's not running to make a statement. He's running to win this thing. Also, more from Baltimore. Russell Brand reverses himself. And big news from the British elections that are coming up this Thursday. What else we got, Matt?
Also, Bernie Sanders isn't the only one who just threw his hat in the ring. We got Ben Carson, baby.
Oh, yeah.
This is turning out to Trump 2012, let me tell you. And on top of that,
Carly Fiorina.
Yeah,
it's a total joke. Everything's a joke.
This is just great for this show.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
thanks,
seriously,
guys.
Jeez, we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Also, Glenn Beck would like you to know what's going to happen to the church if SCOTUS makes marriage equality the law of the land. And much more coming
up on
Matt and Mike Monday on The Majority Report.
And, of course, your calls and IMs. We'll touch on the horrible event in Texas. Everything else. Got a full M&M Monday for you up ahead. We're going to take a brief break right now, and we're going to come back with Ben Mankiewicz of the Young Turks. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
One in fire. I said they're just here when you're going to lose. I want them. I'm back up and warm. Me, I beg you, move. I beg you, back up and warm. Me said that movement alive. Marcus said fi organize and centralize. Rasta fi own banks and enterprise. So me nah stop chant till my soul enter Zion. Princes of fire, Babylon, me tell her your time just expire. What kind of wickedness me are you trying fire? And no gasoline and no tire. Eternal fire, naughty Babylon, you want to get bruised. Me, I want them fire. I said they just can't win, you're going to lose. We are want them. I beg your papa, one go. Tell the pack up and burn. Where them a go with a key and salt fish ring? Better them give me a key and garlic. That's right. Me a map and a compass on ya. Make me show them say salt fish no come from on ya. That fish they come a far away. They bring him all the way from Norway. Hey, I could rest of them a try for chicken. That can't be me national dish of eternal fire.
We are back on The Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks, still in the midst of my chronic obsession. That's not going to go anywhere. Joining us now is Ben Mankiewicz of the Young Turks. He's also a host on Turner Movie Classics. Ben, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, sorry about that, Ben. you just cut out for a moment. It's great to have you on.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I want to start, Ben, by going back to Baltimore, which obviously everybody's been talking about a lot this past week. It seems like the situation on the ground has calmed down a little bit. The curfew's been lifted. The protests have stopped at the moment. Charges are being filed. They've been brought against these officers for the death of Freddie Gray. But the, you know, the bigger questions obviously remain. The bigger questions involve poverty, they involve race and all of the policy questions, but they also involve how Baltimore was covered. You know, I saw a young woman last week confront a reporter from the national media saying, you know, you're only here when something breaks out. And the point was like, you know, this is sort of like a slow motion crisis we're facing every day. So I guess I'd like your thoughts on how the media has dealt with this, and then how can we sort of keep this conversation going somewhat so we don't follow that same cycle where we kind of go from a, you know, crisis back to trance?
Well, I think most critically, all of us, you and me and literally thousands of other people who talk about these issues, have got to stop talking about the national media when what we mean are cable television news. And if you're expecting cable television news to cover this in a responsible way, or local television news even, mm-hmm. although, you know, local Baltimore channels did, you know, better. It's never going to happen. I mean, the expression, if it bleeds, it leads, is amusing. It's also true. And the notion that there are going to be important think pieces on CNN or certainly Fox News, but even MSNBC, throughout the week or any given week about sort of the state of poverty and its relation to race in America's urban centers is ludicrous. That's just not going to happen, and it's never going to happen.
Right.
You might get some good documentaries out of it. So, you know, the important thing is that people sort of keep going to other sources for news, and some of those are very mainstream sources. I mean, you might well get a story about that in the New York Times or the LA Times, where I live, and where, you know, obviously the same kind of situation could break out, although the police of Los Angeles have done a much better job in recent years. But clearly that same sort of a Baltimore scenario could happen here or in any major city or in a small town like Ferguson or, you know, right. suburb like Ferguson. So when we say the media, what we're saying is we're holding Fox News and CNN and MSNBC to a standard which they're not even going to try to meet. So it's not going to happen. And whereas the New York Times and a lot of major newspapers are doing a fairly credible job, and shows like yours, and then the Young Turks sort of are more likely to at least talk about these issues on a regular basis. I don't know what we do. News responds to action, and when that action is scary, or can be made scary to people, like, look at this, angry black people, and there's a fire. Man, that's going to work. And that's what we're going to see. So the reaction that those people have in Baltimore that you're talking about, they're correct. That is when they show up. That's right. But I don't think that can. I don't think that is ever going to change. Not in this environment that we live in.
Right. So, I mean, is that a question you think of just the format of cable news as much as anything else? There's only so much they can do, just sort of given the nature of what they do. And I guess as an addendum to that, I mean, I think you're basically right. You're probably there's a very, very, very low bar when it comes to cable news, and we should only expect so much. And then at the same time, it obviously plays a pretty strong role in how these stories are, you know, formulated and disseminated, although obviously that's changing. So what's the balance then in terms of, you know, we've already established we can only expect so much, which is very little. And then how useful is it to sort of, you know, spending a lot of time dissecting it versus just building the alternative models and supporting the existing models like the New York Times, LA Times, that do more credible and good reporting on this stuff?
I don't know. I mean, it's literally what we think about constantly at the Young Turks. I mean, we don't need 24-hour cable news. I mean, there isn't 24 hours worth of news to cover in the manner that they think it should be covered. I mean, you know, you look at some other countries that do it incredibly soberly. I mean, I guess you could do that, but there would be a tremendous amount of repetition because the lead story at 4 o'clock is probably the same lead story many days as at 11 o'clock. But instead, what we have is sort of, you know, chasing something that is dramatic. And when there's something only kind of dramatic and frequently kind of dramatic, but very unimportant in a big picture, it will still get treated as if the president's being impeached. They don't know how to. No one on cable news says, well, I'm out here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but frankly, I don't think it's that big a deal. That would be great. I would watch that channel almost every day.
That sounds like a new concept right there. Significant, relatively relaxed breaking news network. I like it.
So that's right. This is not really breaking. It happened some time ago. You probably haven't heard about it, but here's the deal. And keep in mind, it doesn't really matter.
This is sort of like an episode of Cops, but we're here because it's entertaining too.
Right. The Jack Tremont. Jack Tremont was a columnist for the Baltimore Sun, political columnist, wrote a column for a long time with Jules Bitcover, and he was one of the first pundits on the McLaughlin Group back, you know, in the days before cable news was just a bunch of talking heads. In fact, the McLaughlin Group probably predated certainly Fox News and MSNBC. And John McLaughlin would go around the room and ask the pundits to make predictions, you know. And so for the 1980 election or whatever, he'd go to Jack Tremont, you know, Jack Tremont, who's going to be the Democratic, you know, is Jimmy Carter going to get challenged or whatever it was. And Tremont would say, I don't know, it's 10 months from now. I can't say. and you know, I loved him for that. And I was 12. And I still love, it's great to hear somebody say, I don't know. And the other thing that's never happened on cable news, which we talk about a lot in the Young Turks, is literally conversations never happened, is that two talking heads are going at it. One of them makes a point, and the second one says, wow, Larry, I never thought about it that way. Thanks. Interesting. Right? That conversation never happened. Yet, literally, it's supposed to be a discussion of ideas. I mean, at some point, when you're talking to a friend, and they say, you know, and you say, I want to eat at Houston's for lunch, and the other guy goes, I want to eat at P.F. Chang's. The guy will go, yeah, P.F. Chang's is a good idea. Let's go there. But
no, you got to hold the line on something like that. But maybe that's not. I'm just playing. You got P.F. Chang's all the way. Actually, no, P.F. Chang's a terrible man. You know, I just will say really quickly, and I'm revealing my age here. The only reason that I know about the McLaughlin Group was there was some, and this also predates my time as well. But I remember there was a best of Saturday Night Live Dana Carvey collection floating around some party I was at once, and somebody put it on, and he did a parody of that show. Which, even without having seen the show, is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, they would long, you know, they gave everybody these crazy long nicknames. Carvey did. I almost remember the Saturday Night Live with Austin spoofs better. But I mean, look how that is sort of the first, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but among the first nationally recognized pundit shows, and instantly a satirical show like Saturday Night Live recognized, oh, this is perfect for us. These are just a bunch of guys. You know, my best friend is the dean of the UNLV Law School, and his sister is a wonderful comedian. And she, one of her, her name is Rachel Hamilton, and one of her ideas is that there'd just be a television show that would star her mother called Strong Opinions. And it would just be a TV show where people, and it's funny, but we kind of already have it. But the idea definitely. That we would just call it Strong Opinions, and you would just say really fiercely something you believe that you know very, very little about.
Right, right, right. Yeah, like watching, I always really enjoy watching Bob Beckel talk about China. But that's a just beautiful example of what you're talking about.
Strong Opinions.
He's got some experience with China, though, because that really sets him off. I don't know whether it was a dispute about a date or whatever. I shouldn't go into
I think he went to P.F. Chang's. I think that's all it was, yeah.
I said, they didn't return my order, and I was very upset about that. They're stealing our secrets. So pivoting from this, and this is, I guess, you know, when you look at the possibility of some of these conversations happening in cable news, but again, more broadly, not just on cable news with its inherent limits, obviously presidential races are, you know, the sort of mechanism through which some of that can happen. And, you know, Bernie Sanders getting in the race, all of a sudden you have a press conference, which is going to, you know, is played across the networks. And you have a guy talking clearly and robustly about inequality, about corruption, about global warming. But the question I have, and again, this is another two-parter, I guess this is my technique here. But first is, you know, how does that, you know, what is the sort of, how durable can Bernie's attempts to have like an actual conversation about things last relative to, like, hey, Bernie Sanders is kind of like Larry David, or, you know, is, can he really run? And, you know, how does, what, the him and Hillary, do they secretly hate each other? What, you know, whatever other conversations kind of go around. And then I guess actually secondly, and I'll just throw this on here because I think it's worth discussing, because it kind of puts our own roles in play as well. I mean, I think obviously Bernie Sanders is an incredible long shot, and all the safe money is on Hillary Clinton, and no doubt about it. But even by entering this conversation, as I've definitely noticed I've done in the past couple of days on this show and Ring of Fire and other places, and just even, you know, conversationally with friends, is like, well, he can push the conversation in a certain direction, almost sort of just like implicitly accepting that this is just a message campaign and not a win campaign. It very well could be, but is it doing a disservice that it were, at least I won't speak for other people, have already sort of jumped on that bandwagon, even in more, you know, progressive or in-depth media?
Well, I don't think that people who do this for a living and do it responsibly should pretend that everyone has an equal chance of winning.
Right.
Now, it's not quantifiable. You know, I'm a huge baseball fan, and at the beginning of the season, theoretically, everyone has a chance, right?
Right.
But you know, some teams aren't going to win. You just look at it and you think that's possible. Although I would point out that pretty much the consensus choice for last place in the American League West are the Houston Astros, and they've won, I think, 11 straight games, 10 or 11 straight games. So, you know, and if that lasts, that would be about as likely, I would imagine, as Bernie Sanders winning the Democratic nomination. It's not impossible. Here's who's not going to win: the people who aren't running.
Right.
So the mere fact that he's running, should Hillary suffer some cataclysmic ethical fall, which I think we all think is possible, I think it's incredibly unlikely. And then I think if she did have some fall, that we would see some much bigger names, even if it happened, you know, 2 weeks before the convention, we might see bigger names suddenly getting in the race. You might see, you know, not just Elizabeth Warren, but maybe, you know, who knows whether Joe Biden's going to run.
Al Gore, maybe. Yeah.
But, you know, Al Gore, I mean, he's been so quiet, it makes me wonder what he's done and that he thinks maybe is politically untenable. It doesn't mean it's illegal or corrupt or anything. I'm just curious. He doesn't seem interested. But, you know, I mean, Andrew Cuomo, any number, Jim Webb, you know, obviously, some of those people would have a far greater chance than some others.
We will always march against Cuomo here. I just got to say that. Yeah, he's not acceptable.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But so, you know, I think that so it's okay for us to say he doesn't have a chance or he has a limited chance. I think what we should probably avoid is mocking him.
Right.
Because, of course, in mocking him, it instantly makes his ideas seem mock-worthy. He is not the Ben Carson of the left,
right?
I mean,
or the Ron Paul.
If you look at, or the Ron Paul. That's right. He is a, and in fact, if you look at, there was a story. We did this on Friday on the Young Turks, maybe Thursday. We went over there was a mainstream article. I think it was Politico, maybe it was The Hill. That was the story we used for the Bernie Sanders run, and it listed sort of the six things he was talking about. And it said things that appeal to the far left, and it talked about discussions of economic inequality, tax fairness. Of course, I blanked out on some of these now. They were
campaign finance, maybe money out of politics, reform, that
campaign,
type of thing.
Campaign finance reform, which of course is championed by John McCain.
Right.
And three other things which weren't even vaguely controversial, or things that, which are things that the majority of the country, without question, believe in.
Right.
And but because he's Bernie Sanders and he's a Democratic Socialist, the idea now is that these are only far left issues, and that's what we have to change. That's the mistake. The mistake is not saying that Bernie Sanders is unlikely to win, just the same way that it was unlikely that anybody was going to beat George Bush in 2000 with the enormous amount of money that he had coming his way, that huge fundraising advantage, and the establishment was with him. The Democratic establishment, which is far less formidable than the Republican establishment, is obviously with Hillary Clinton. There is the sense that it is her time. There is, even though she's a Clinton and not a young woman, has, because she's a woman, has the sort of potential to energize people, because like Obama, it is something new. But
right.
So
I agree with you, Ben.
But that said, we can. His ideas are important, and his ideas, I want to keep pointing out, that if this were 1984, would just be, and certainly 1972, I mean, those things in 1972 are far, far, far less to the left than George McGovern.
Right.
So there would have been, you know, well, I mean, there obviously had already been a Watergate, but I mean, and if George McGovern had been elected president, we would have had a completely different era in America in the 1970s, and we would never have impeached a president. So this guy is not a radical leftist. The country has moved so far to the right that these incredibly mainstream ideas, and protecting Social Security, protecting Medicare, those crazy leftist ideas.
Right. Right. Overwhelmingly popular government programs, in fact. I mean, nothing could be more mainstream than that. And I think there's a really, really important point. I just want to add to that just as we kind of talk about this false equivalency that kind of clusters around, you know, both sides do it, the sort of, you know, well, this person accepts the science of global warming, this person doesn't, they both have a perspective, blah, blah, blah. There's also this weird sort of narrative that's building around, you know, these kind of doing the same things with this supposed extreme. So it's like, well, you know, Bernie's on the far left because he thinks that, a billionaire should actually pay a proper tax rate and we need to do something about poverty, and he supports Social Security. Again, totally sane, sensible, rational things that most people support.
Real quick, yeah, one of these things, by the way, was investment in infrastructure.
Yeah, right, crazy, which Obama even talks about regularly. Right.
Right.
And then on the other hand, you know, and he's on the far left. And then you have, you know, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and frankly, I would say really all of the Republicans at this point, obviously,
right,
but those are kind
right.
of stand-ins. Yeah. They believe that maybe the government is trying to take over Texas in a secret military coup, and Obama's going to activate Shia shock troops to implement a Nation of Islam-administered Sharia regime.
Right,
well, I shouldn't have even said that. I think that's a new one. It will be spreading soon. You know, this insane notion that, like, well, those represent the extremes. And then in the center, you just have different people quibbling on Morning Joe about how best to make retirees and poor people suffer.
That's right. That is an argument. And that we can do something about. We're not going to get big issues covered, like how to fight poverty, and local news is not going to do that. But we have already made a big difference in the last, and that's as broad a we as there can be. I mean, online, you know, led in many ways, in my opinion, sort of first by the breaking through the Huffington Post and Keith Olbermann, making
right.
it sort of a recognition that there is an alternative to that narrative. And, you know, and now we have other than the viewers of Fox, at least you know, first of all, let me forget Fox for a second. When's the last time you heard someone in an important position talk about what the Drudge Report covered?
I had no memory of that.
Recently, in 2004, that, as Mark Halperin wrote in his book, Mark Halperin, who's inexplicably treated as this sort of, you know, independent sage, would go to the Drudge Report to see what Washington was talking about. I mean, the Drudge Report is a crazy, crack, far-right, loony website.
Right.
And we beat that, right? We stopped that. And now there's a recognition that Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, they have their viewers and they have their listeners, and they're going to make money, and people and those viewers and listeners will always be there. But they've been marginalized because we've talked about and we've exploited those crazy clips, and regular Americans have thought, well, okay, that's crazy.
Right.
That Sean Hannity sounds crazy. So we've had some success. So in regard to sort of making it clear that Bernie Sanders isn't a crackpot, I think that's an argument that if shows like the one we're on now, and if shows like mine and Jenks and all these sort of significant online left-wing presence keep talking about that, at least the sort of mainstream media may stop talking about him as if it's just another Lyndon LaRouche. I wish socialist weren't in his title, because it makes it harder. I admire him for it, but I wish it weren't in his title, because it does make it harder.
You know, it kind of reminds me, I, again, this is before my time, but like, you know, that nickname that your, I guess your current governor and former governor, Jerry Brown, that Governor Moonbeam. And I remember looking at it, it's like he got that name from advocating policies in the 70s that, again, advances in technology, alternative and sustainable energy that are both right. absolutely right and just forward looking, you know, and that yeah, was enough right. to yeah. sort of turn him into a character.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I wish Jerry Brown would run for president, you know, again.
Actually, let's do that for a couple. I mean, in some ways, besides the fact that he's run a couple times before, and I guess being in his 70s, but he seems like he's a very healthy guy. I mean, why not? If anybody sort of had a national profile to justify a presidential run, I really couldn't imagine anybody besides Hillary Clinton more than Jerry Brown making sense.
Yeah, and he's alienated a lot of progressives in right. California. But I mean, I suppose in some sense I'm one of them. But the deficit was enormous, and they reduced it. And we at least, you know, the rich people in California pay a much fairer share. Oh, by the way, one of the other Bernie Sanders things was free public education, which of course we used to have, college education. Right. And again, not a crazy idea. So. Yeah, I'd love, by the way, I'd love it if Jerry Brown won. I think that all of them, like Elizabeth Warren, feel like I have no interest in trying to go through the process of raising all this money to get sort of chewed up and spit out by this incredibly effective and clearly quite ruthless Clinton machine.
Right, right.
You know, they know what they're doing, and they're barring a huge slip-up by her, maybe not out of her control. And maybe it's this Clinton Foundation story. I don't know. I don't sense it yet.
I don't
but
think
it's certainly
so.
That one feels much. It feels significantly weightier to me than the emails.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I don't. But that said, I don't think it. I don't think it knocks her down to the point where a bunch of other Democrats scramble to get in the race. But we hope the Democrats that do get in the race are more in the Bernie Sanders ilk, at least the way of thinking, and not in the old. You know, not remember when you know Evan Bayh was. Thought of as the savior of the Democratic Party, when in fact what he was the savior of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, if he could even rise to that level. You know, as a final question before we wrap up, I guess just back on Hillary for a moment. Don't you think that in some ways, though, that because she has been such a point of focus for the right-wing media and conspiracy theories and you know, and misogyny and everything else, that in some ways it's kind of like baked into the cake with her? Like, even if something was maybe a more legitimate or valid question, that all of these stories exist in a context of everybody kind of knowing, like in the same way you said earlier, yeah, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, everybody's sure they're going to try to destroy her. And yeah, maybe her and her husband play a little fast and loose sometimes. But then again, doesn't pretty much everybody in politics besides Bernie Sanders, you know, and so what? Who cares? I like her.
Yes, I agree, and I don't even think you have to like her. You have to hate them.
Right.
And yeah, and that works for me. I don't like Hillary. I mean, the right. degree of disappointment that I have that she was the most important Democrat in the country for a long time and could have made a difference about the seminal issue of the last 20 years, the war in Iraq.
Definitely.
And just didn't. She just yep. chose not to. I mean, if she had a press conference, it would have been covered by everyone in the media every single day, but she didn't do it.
No, she made waited. It worse. She waited. I mean, she voted
she made it worse. She made yeah. things worse. I mean, yeah. the abdication of leadership there is staggering at an important moment. I don't think it makes you the worst person in the world, but I would say it disqualifies you to be the leader of this country. But that said, I her enemies are so loathsome that I'll end up defending her. I know it. I know right. me, and I know that I am not exceptional and that others will feel the same way. I judge you by the evility to make up a word of your enemies. And her enemies are pretty evil. So, you know, not like, you know, Batman villain evil, but
some of them are.
So, you know, yeah, so I think you're right in a sense that you know, the more stuff that, you know, stuff comes out about it, there could be a tendency to think, oh, well, this is the work of Roger Ailes. So I'm going to ignore this and I'm going to defend her.
First woman president, beat the Republicans. This will be our mantra for the whole general election cycle.
Yeah, and don't forget how popular her husband was. That matters a lot. Too, so.
I really, really appreciate your time, Ben Mankiewicz.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, man. Ben Mankiewicz of the Young Turks and Turner Movie Classics, which I got to check out. And we didn't even get a chance to talk about the fight, but we're out of time. Thanks a lot, Ben.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. Well, we'll talk about it. Yeah, we'll talk about the fight. Absolutely.
But let's get to that Jade Helm thing, because that is hilarious. And we have sound for this.
Yep,
so.
It's ready.
So last week, Sam brought up the Jade Helm 15 conspiracy theory that's spreading through the country. Most likely you've seen it on Facebook via your right-wing family members who may live in Texas or Utah. Basically, what's going on is conspiracy theorists believe, and many right-wingers are part of this group of conspiracy theorists, that there is a military coup on the way because there are training exercises going on in the deserts of Texas and Utah and other Western American states of the U.S. military. And this is clearly, obviously, Obama preparing for martial law, according to them. Obviously. What else would it be? I mean, it couldn't possibly be that the terrain in those American states are most closest to the terrain in Middle Eastern countries that we're involved in, and that's the perfect area for them to train in so they can be prepared for the terrain overseas. Couldn't be that. That sounds insane.
Stop trying to distract us.
That sounds
we
insane.
We know what's happening.
But this conspiracy theory has taken such a life of its own that Texas Governor Greg Abbott has felt the need to spend taxpayers' money to inquire into this and look into this and find out what's really going on. Now, it's bad enough that a governor of a state as large as Texas is this crazy and insane himself to believe his own crazy and insane constituents. But Rand Paul was asked, a clip we played also last week, you can find it on our YouTube channel, where he said, you know, I'm not familiar with this, I'll take a look at it. You know, usually we wouldn't give him such a pass, but because how he said what he said, we said, you know, maybe this insane conspiracy theory actually hasn't gotten as high as, you know, Senator Rand Paul, who's running for president. So we gave him the benefit of the doubt. We said maybe he didn't hear about this. He said he'll look into it, as in, let me check out this conspiracy theory. Oh, look, it is batshit crazy. I'm not taking this any further. We don't know if that's how he's felt yet, but we gave that to him. But we can't give that same thing to Ted Cruz. He does not deserve that same benefit of the doubt, because over the weekend, he came out in an interview with Dave Weigel, and he said this.
Well, I have a great deal of faith and confidence in Governor Abbott. He is a longtime friend and mentor of mine. You know, I understand the concern that's been raised by a lot of citizens about Jade Helm. It's a question I'm getting a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason is we have seen for 6 years a federal government disrespecting the liberty of the citizens. And that produces fear when you see a federal government that is attacking our free speech rights or religious liberty rights or Second Amendment rights. That produces distrust as to government. Now, my office, we've reached out to the Pentagon to inquire about this exercise. We're assured that it is a military training exercise. And I have no reason to doubt those assurances, but I understand the reason for concern and uncertainty, because when the federal government has not demonstrated itself to be trustworthy in this administration, the natural consequence is that many of the citizens don't trust what it's saying.
Now, kudos to Ted Cruz. We'll give him that for outright saying, you know, I don't believe in this Jade Helm conspiracy theory. I personally don't believe it. Kudos to Ted Cruz for not being 100% batshit insane. But for giving any sort of credence to this idea, to take these conspiracy theorists and say, you know, I looked into this issue. I contacted the Pentagon because, you know, they have a good reason to believe this. You're about maybe, let's say, on this issue, 85%, maybe 90% batshit insane. You are giving this dangerous fringe some sort of legitimacy by saying and actually doing, contacting the Pentagon and asking them, So you guys are training for a military coup over there in Texas? And then to say they have real reason to not trust their government. I understand where they're coming from. Yeah, okay, there are good reasons, I guess, not to trust your government in certain areas. You know, the NSA revelations have certainly proven that there are things that the government does that you can't, you know, they need, there needs to be those checks and balances to make sure they're not getting away with abusing their powers. But to believe that that distrust is the same as believing that there is a military operation going on in Texas, Utah, and a number of other Western American states that are currently training and preparing for martial law and a military coup because Obama wants to take over the country via armed forces, ostensibly, obviously, to take away your guns, to ban your religion and burn down your churches and make gay marriage the law of the land.
I'm getting hard just thinking about it. It's great. Can't wait.
Ludicrous. And let's just for a second believe that that Obama is this mastermind, that the government is this nefarious entity that's planning to take over the country via military coup, implement martial law, and Obama will become the tyrannical dictator that the right wing believes him to be. You think Ted Cruz would be able to call the Pentagon and be like, is this thing actually happening? And the Pentagon going, of course not. You would believe that? Maybe Ted Cruz trusts this government too much. I mean, it's just bizarre and insane. It doesn't make any sense.
Just a follow-up question. You guys planning on turning Texas into an Islamic caliphate, taking away our guns?
No way.
Hey, that's great, though. It's like, any other questions on the docket for today?
Yeah. You guys planning on declaring martial law on us? Just been hearing about that.
We don't trust you guys, but if you tell us no, we'll believe it.
Oh, you're not? Cool. Great. All right. Because, yeah, people are a little worried about that.
Just ridiculous.
I think we should go to the fun half.
Let's go to the fun half.
All right, everybody. 646-257-3920. You want to run through all the things that people can do?
You can support this show by becoming a member at majority.fm. Go to majority.fm, click become a member, and you can sign up for this show for as little as a cheap bodega-style cup of coffee a day.
And for people outside of New York, that's like a convenience store.
Yes. You can also support this show by going to majorityreportkickback.com. That's our Amazon affiliate link. You go there, majorityreportkickback.com. You see the Amazon page just like you would if you went to amazon.com. Except when you purchase it through that our page, we get a small kickback. And if you bookmark that and use that link whenever you make any Amazon purchase, you will always give us that small kickback that Amazon is forced to give us. JustCoffee.coop, use coupon code MAJORITY, get fair trade coffee and chocolates. YouTube.com/Sam Cedar is the new YouTube page for not only...
Sorry about that.
That's all right. For not only the clips that we post every day, but also for the live stream of the live daily show. Go there, subscribe to it, and you will never be left behind in terms of what the Majority Report does video-wise. At Majority FM is where you can follow us on Twitter. Facebook.com/Majority Report is for Facebook. Like us there. What else? Am I forgetting anything?
I don't think so.
Yeah, the Indiegogo campaign is concluded. We're still waiting on, I guess, that to go through and everything.
But it was a huge success.
It was a huge success.
You know what? When it comes to the Majority Report, I wouldn't count us out.
Well, and we'll get to that clip, I guess, right when we get into the better half. We shall see you in just a moment. Sit in a blue.